Used to be that there were rites of passages that young people would go through. Depending on what nation or what tribe perhaps you were in, there would be some kind of ritual that would be performed. And once that ritual was completed, you would be considered an adult. In Western culture, modern culture, that is no longer the case. And in fact, I think perhaps that's why a lot of folks have trouble growing up, is because there is not that line of distinction that says you're no longer a child, you're now an adult. But as we kind of grapple with that idea in our culture, one of the areas that does mark at least the beginning points of adulthood is graduation. And as was noted earlier, we have several in our midst who are about to go through that, several who have just recently graduated. We have several more who are just on the cusp, 1 year away from that. And for these young people, there's a lot to consider at this point in your life, a lot of things about to happen. And this morning, what I'd like to do is talk about after graduation. And while the lesson is primarily aimed at those in that age group, I have a feeling that there might be a thing or two the rest of us can gain from it. Some things that even though graduation might just perhaps be a very distant memory by now, things that in our lives we need to be thinking about still even to this day as we consider giving our lives to the Lord. One of the things that I think, especially for those who are graduating, for young people in general, to be reminded of, is that you need to have a very healthy respect for those older than you are. When we consider that, the transition from childhood to adulthood is a rather challenging thing. All of a sudden, you've got responsibilities, you've got issues, you've got cares that you did not have before that point. And I'm afraid sometimes we begin thinking that as we get into adulthood, that we must make all of these decisions on our own, and if we look for help from anybody, that's kind of a sign of weakness, and that is just simply not what the Lord teaches at all. In fact, as we consider this, God says that with age should come great blessing in years of wisdom. We actually addressed this somewhat last week, but I want to go back and remind us of just a couple of passages that we identified as we talked about age and the need to stay faithful. One of the passages we referenced was from Job, and we noted that Job and his friends did not always exercise the greatest of wisdom, but they understood that for those who had grown old in the Lord, that there should be wisdom with them. In fact, Job 12:12, wisdom is with the aged and understanding in the length of days. When we look at this, we need to see that those who have grown older in the Lord are those who have a great deal of wisdom for us. In fact, another passage we noted in the Psalm 92, verses 14 and 15, talking about those who had stayed faithful. It says, they still bear fruit in old age. They are ever full of sap and green and declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. A young adult will show very great wisdom when he turns to those who are older, when she turns to those who have given their lives over to the Lord for a very long period of time, to ask that advice, to seek that wisdom, and to seek that help in making decisions. Now, with that being stated in general, let me make it a little bit more specific. One of the groups in particular that we need to continue looking to is our parents. If you have been blessed to be in a household with godly parents, you have a very valuable resource on hand. I think it interesting that as Solomon started out his book on Proverbs, he began writing it as though a father is writing to his sons. And as he addressed that, he said in the very first chapter, as he's speaking to his son, he said, "Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." As he oftentimes did in the book of Proverbs, he put it in very symbolic, beautiful language. That he's saying, when you've got parents who are looking out for your best interest, when you've got those who have given themselves over to the Lord, you have a very valuable tool, a very valuable resource at hand, and it needs to be used. Now, just briefly, let me turn that around. Parents, we have a very sobering responsibility in that regard. And I think as we look at our children who are becoming adults, It is a very sobering thing. And those who have gone through that know that as much of a transition as it is for kids becoming adults, it's a transition for parents whose kids are becoming adults. And oftentimes, parents are terribly tempted to give safe advice rather than good advice. So many times, we look at our kids and we want to say, I want to map out the safest possible course for you. I want to give you the safest things that you can do. That's not always the best thing. In fact, if you look in the Scriptures, you find that oftentimes God didn't send people on the safe course, did He, as we think about it? He didn't send it on a course where you're not going to meet opposition and you're not going to meet problems. But God always sent them on the best course. And parents need to consider that as children look to their parents, even in older years, to say that this is what is best based on what God would have you to do. I want us to understand to our young people that there may be times when the advice your parents give you is not going to be the advice you take. You may, as a young adult, look at that advice and say, I hear what they're saying, but that's just not the course I want to go. There's times like that we've all experienced, but nonetheless, listen. There's going to be occasions when you're going to gain things, even if you don't follow fully that advice. The principles that you get from it are going to be very good. And I would encourage all of us that as we consider taking that advice, that we don't allow pride to stand in our way. So many times I think we tend to believe we're somewhat weak if we have to listen to someone else. If we're taking advice from someone else, that it makes us appear to be people who can't make up our minds. And as long as that's not a habitual thing, we understand that is just completely wrong. We do need to listen. We do need to take the advice of others. In fact, Solomon once again says the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. The entire book of Proverbs is talking about wisdom. It's talking about how we grow to that point in the Lord. And one of the things Solomon tells us is to make sure that you are listening. One other specific group that perhaps does not get the attention that it needs. And I would strongly encourage our young people, those of you who are about to make the transition, to use the resource that you have at hand. And that's what church elders have to say. So many times, I'm afraid we limit that role of elder to something that it was never intended to be limited to. We tend to look at the elders as the ones who are making these big decisions for a church, the ones who are dealing with difficult situations, and that is indeed the case. But I think as we look at the work of an elder, we find something else. You listen to what the writer of Hebrews says, and he says, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. So we turn that around on a positive, and we say, if we do listen, it is an advantage to us. I'm afraid sometimes we view talking to the elders kind of like getting in trouble. You know, you're called into your dad's study, or you're called into the principal's office, or you have to stay after class, and it's kind of this fearful thing. That should not be the relationship at all. What this should be is, again, the idea of here are men who have been selected because of their wisdom, because of their outstanding qualities of godliness. And what a wonderful blessing it is when you're a part of a congregation that has several elders who have had children who have gone through what you're going through, who have themselves gone through that and successfully navigated that transition. One of the things we can see as a great blessing is when we have those who can give wisdom that's going to make life better. So I would encourage you, as I would encourage all of us, to listen to those who have worthwhile advice. The second thing I would recommend to you is that once again you think about who you're going to associate with. When we think about companions, these are the people who in many ways are going to influence the kind of people we're going to be. And what we find at that stage of transition is that our parents are no longer there to serve as a filter for us. There may be times when you grow quite irritated with your parents because they're constantly questioning, where are you going? Who are you going to be with? Who are these people's parents? Where do they go to church? What kind of folks are they? And it's almost like an interrogation. And the reason for that is, kind of going back to our last point, parents have been there and parents have seen what companions can do. I once asked a group to write down, a group about to go off into to college. I said, just write down what you think your biggest struggles are going to be. It was a very interesting read. One young man I remember wrote down, he said, well, my parents keep telling me how bad the world is and all of these people out there waiting to get me, but it's not going to be that bad. I understand that they really are not out to do in my faith. I tell you, I just shook my head and I was concerned for that young man. Because what he's saying is, what I have been told is really not as important as these people are making it out to be. No, when we think about our companions, whatever age we are thinking about people who are going to have a very major impact on us. Whether that's a roommate in college, whether that's several guys or girls that you share an apartment with, whether it be someone who you eventually marry. By the way, statistics bear out that during those college years, most people are meeting who they're going to marry. That as you think about those people with whom you're associating, they're going to have a lasting impact on you. And so we need to remember that. We need to remember the influence. Now, here is our consummate passage, isn't it? This is the one we come to over and over. And if you have been raised in a Christian home, you have heard bad company corrupts good morals all your life. Well, I'll remind you, it's still a good passage, even though you know a lot about it. And I also remind you that the Apostle Paul was writing this to Christians about Christians. He was not talking about people out in the deep, dark world. He was talking about those who were actually having a bad influence on the spirituality of other Christians. And I bring that out just simply to say, because someone wears the name Christian, that does not necessarily mean that that person is the best associate to have. But contrast that with another writing that we find of Solomon. We think about what he says in Proverbs 17:17, where a friend loves at all times, and a brother, one who is very close, is born for adversity. One who is going to be there for you. What a stark contrast of bewaring of those who are seeking to bring you down and seeking out those who are trying to help you. That's a lesson that I believe is good for us no matter what age we are. But especially as kind of that safety gauge that we've had all of these years in our parents is slowly beginning to be taken away. When we now are faced to make those decisions, to look and to see who is the right and who is the wrong influence on us. And so I would just encourage all of you, as you look at this, make sure that you are seeking out godly company. Make sure you're seeking out those who have the same values as you do. Seeking out those who are trying to be like you want to be. And I want to warn you very much against this idea of thinking, I can change their behavior. I'm a good person, and if I'm around them, I'm going to lift those people up. Well, if you can do that, that's wonderful. But what we find on most occasions is that it's much easier for someone to bring themselves down than to bring someone else up. And so you have got to be awfully cautious as you consider this. Don't fool yourselves into thinking that you can do something that you're not strong enough to do. So we consider these things. We think about the blessing of companions. We think about the curse of companions as well. And be very careful about that. A third point that I'd like to make this morning is that as you consider your lives and consider what you're about to do, make sure that you use your time wisely. Whether you're in college or whether you're going to get a full-time job, whatever the case, you are about to find that before this point, you really had no idea about the term busy. Busy is about to take on a whole new meaning, especially if you are going into a field or going into college where it's going to require a lot of coursework, a lot of stuff that you're going to be doing and you're trying to hold a job down at that time. There's going to be a great temptation there to allow these activities to completely consume you. Here's one of these things where even if we graduated a long time ago, we need to pay very close attention. So many times in our lives, this is what kills us. This is what happens to us because we allow ourselves to become so inundated with everything that we think is important that we forget about what the most important thing is. And that's the fact that we are going to stay faithful to the Lord. So as we consider this point, we understand that it's an exciting time. Things that we're involved in are good. The activities are going to be things we remember forever. Yet, we also remember that that cannot replace the most important thing of all. I can remember when I was in college, and I tell you, I don't look back with a lot of fondness concerning this point. I look back and I see my life at that point, how busy I was in so many things, and I realize how easy it was at this time to allow the most important thing to slip out of the place that it needed to be. So we need to be very careful about that. We need to understand that our activities are going to begin and they're going to end with the Lord. Consider what the Apostle Paul said in Ephesians chapter 5. He said, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, redeeming the time, we sometimes read, because the days are evil. He didn't write that just to old folks. He didn't write that just to people who were way on up in years. What he's saying is when you look at your life, understand what the most important time is for you and act accordingly in that regard. And so as we look at our lives, I would encourage all of you, I would encourage all of us together to remember that there must be time for worship and there must be time for personal study. When we convince ourselves that Sunday night and Wednesday night really aren't that important to us, we have done ourselves a great disservice. When we have said that meeting with the saints is second or third or fourth priority after I get everything else done, we have convinced ourselves of something that the devil is quite happy that we've convinced ourselves of. When we get to the point of saying my study of math or biology or history or English is more important than my study of the Word of God, I have convinced myself of something very, very dangerous. And so I would encourage you that the way that you're going to build a successful life is to make sure that you leave time for God, that you make sure that He is there in everything that you do. Which brings us to the final point that I'd like to make this morning. And that's the fact that we need to keep God in all of our decision making. When we think about all of the decisions that come in a lifetime, it's amazing. I was privileged to be invited to the Group 4 meeting last night. And I appreciate how Anthony started that off. He said, I want you to think about everything that's happened to you in the last 10 years. Where were you 10 years ago? I tell you, that's kind of a sobering thought. When you look back over your life, back over a decade, and you look and you see all of the things that have happened, and the older you get, the shorter those decades seem. You look back and you say, I can't believe that 10 years is gone. But you look in that 10-year period of time, and you say, these decisions have been made. Here's how they impacted my life. I imagine that all of us who are a little bit older can look back and say, there are some of those we'd like to go back and redo. There are some of those decisions that we made that we'd like to do over. And the reason I would say the majority of the time is because we probably didn't have God fully in focus. We made decisions based on our own reasoning without letting God take full benefit in that decision. For those who are graduating and those around, the past 10 years are pretty much the majority of your life. You think about the last 10 years and it may seem like an eternity. But the next 10 years, if the Lord gives you that, are going to be filled with all kinds of decisions. They're going to be filled with all kinds of things that are going to have a huge impact on you. And so God must be the primary concern. I want you just to think about some of the decisions that you're going to make. Many of you, most of you, perhaps all of you, are going to make the decision to go to college. That's a good decision. It's not the only decision that can be made, but it's a good one. But you've got to realize that with that, there are challenges that you're going to meet. If you're going to a university of any size, life is about to change considerably. When a young Christian goes to a university, there are things that probably that young Christian has never, ever even heard of that are going to be practiced. And in many colleges, what we find are students who get away from parents, who break out of any kind of restraint, who are involved in things that are very detrimental, not only physically, but more important, spiritually. And so a young person has got to make a decision, what would God have me to do in this situation? What would God have me to do? And the lines are very clear many times, black and white, between the good and the bad. We make sure that we choose the good. Let me say this as well. There are dangers when we choose a morally based college. When it's not a state university, a secular university that we choose to go to, when we choose a college that may have somewhat of a faith-based outlook. I heard a professor at one of these colleges say one time that he was always amazed that a student who would come who was into smoking and drinking and such worldly activities. He made the statement, he said, that within 15 minutes they have sniffed out every other student who's involved in those same kinds of things. Because you go to a college that says it's morally based, because you go to a college that says this is a place where young Christians come to further their knowledge, that does not mean that temptation is suddenly at bay. No, it'll be there. And I would say to you as well, when you go to a faith-based college, a morally based college, that has a different outlook on religion than you do, there are great dangers in that. It's not to say that it can't be mastered. It's not to say that it can't be navigated. But suddenly when you see good people seemingly doing good things, but without the authority to do it, that black and white suddenly becomes very gray. And I'm afraid a lot of times that makes it a lot easier for us than to say, well, if good people are doing things that look good, maybe I'm the one who's wrong. There's nothing wrong with checking our own values to make sure that they're with the Bible. But when we look at the Bible and we see that, we have to avoid that temptation to say, I'm giving in. If I'm going to join in, I don't want to be the one who looks like the stick in the mud religiously. I don't want to be the one who's always seemingly saying, no, we've got to look for our authority on that. In that, we must be very, very careful. College is going to be a challenge no matter where you go. I can promise you that Satan does not suddenly turn off the temptations for 4 years and will use whatever temptations he can to get you at a young age. During this time as well, you're going to be choosing which career path you go down. What an important decision. I didn't realize how big that was until I had kids who were making that decision. It didn't seem like that huge a deal when it was me. But you start looking at a 17, 18, 19-year-old who is suddenly there saying, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. That's a bit of a frightening thing. And when you look at this, there's questions to ask. What is this career going to do to my spirituality? Am I choosing a career that is going to pull me away from my family on a very, very regular basis? Is it going to put me in a situation where I cannot meet with brethren on a regular basis? Is it going to take me places where there are not Christians who I can meet with and assemble with for that worship to God? As we think about our careers, the monetary aspect is not the most important, although that's typically what we hear about. Choose the career where you're going to make money. Choose the career where you're going to be successful. Choose the career that's going to give you a good retirement. No, put all those things on the back burner. Choose the career that's not going to interfere with your godliness. Choose the career where you're going to be able to in no way be inhibited by the things that might entail you doing. And of course, that would lead us right into the next, that career then leading to the specific job that you take. We've been in a time when finding a job is not easy. I'm not sure we're quite out of that time as of yet. But yet even in that, even in the fact that it may be somewhat difficult, we don't lower our standards. We don't say that I'm going to do something that's going to compromise my spirituality. It may be we're underemployed. Maybe that we're having to take a job that really we're much more qualified for something else than it. But if it means that my faith can grow, if it means that I'm not going to have to locate to an area where there are not faithful brethren with whom I can meet and work, I'm willing to do it. Big decisions. And the one that I suppose we could spend a lot of time on, but we're not, is who you're going to marry. You think about 10 years from now, most of you who are graduating, you'll probably have a ring on your finger. You'll probably be married to someone who perhaps you've already met, perhaps somebody you're going to meet in the next 3 or 4 years. That's huge. Because that decision in many ways is going to impact you more than any other. Here is the person who is either going to help or hurt your efforts to get to heaven. And I would encourage you as you think about that decision to think very, very carefully. Don't rush into something that's going to be a miserable experience for a long time. We could add to this list so many things. But yet what I want us to see is that while the next few years are going to be exciting and they're going to be fun and they're going to be just years that you'll never forget, don't fail to put God in the picture. Don't fail to put Him squarely in the midst of every decision that's made. Because what we need to understand is this, is that right decisions are made when the Lord is our main focus. Psalm 34 is such a beautiful chapter that brings that out in so many ways. Where the writer is saying, when God is in the picture, things are going to go right with Him. Will it always be the easiest course? Absolutely not. Sometimes it'll be the harder course in the short term. But when God is in the decision, it's going to be the right decision that's made. As we consider all of these things, we think about taking advice, we think about our companions, we think about our use of time, we think about the decisions that we make. Really, it all boils down to the fact of this, how faithful am I going to be to the Lord? And when I can say that the Lord is my number one concern in everything that I do, we'll find that making the right decision becomes much easier to do. And so with that, I encourage you to consider these things. But also for all of us, I think we understand that what we're talking about for those who are very young, that the majority of these things don't go away, do they? These are things that we deal with throughout our entire life here on this earth. But the point is the same. If God is our main focus, these decisions will be made correctly.